time for Sunoco Three-Star Extra. Headline news around the world. Your Sunoco newspaper of the air.
Ray Hendley with tonight's edition of Three-Star Extra, originating in Washington. We'll have the news for you in a moment. First, the Sun Oil Company, Hugh James.
Men, if your wife sees to it that the family car is serviced periodically, be sure she has a service station dealer you can depend on. A dealer like your Sunoco dealer, who remembers and does all the things about good car care that a woman isn't expected to think about. Check the oil. How's the tire pressure? Fan belt's a little loose. Better check the water. When was the last chassis lubrication? Time to rotate those tires. It's this thoughtful, dependable, and really fast custom service that influences so many men to have their wives stop at Sunoco for the best in service. Get the finest service going for your car. Have your wife bring it to Sunoco, where every product, every service, is designed to make your car run best while you pay less. And now, Sunoco's reporters are ready with the news.
The world tonight is a world in change. New ideas, new methods of tackling old problems are coming to the fore at the White House, the Pentagon, in Congress. President Johnson used the forum of Baylor University of Waco, Texas today to reinforce his momentous decisions of coping with the world communist movement. In Congress, that branch of government grappled with epoch-making new programs. The United Nations seriously fought it. Let us tonight take a closer look at the picture. Now, special three-star report, the White House, the President at Baylor, Bill Henry.
President Lyndon Johnson's determination to make his mark as a president who makes prompt decisions and believes in backing them up with swift action was emphasized in two presidential appearances in Texas today. Speaking directly to the student body of Baylor University at Waco, but obviously having in mind the small but vociferous academic groups that have questioned his policy, the president said, "When ours can decide the fate of generations, the moment of decision must become the moment of action." He urged that the Organization of American States adopt machinery which would enable it to meet the sudden challenges of today as swiftly and effectively as the United States responded to the emergency in Santo Domingo. "We have learned," the president said, "that we can act decisively and together." His commencement address at Baylor, at which time he was awarded an honorary degree of Doctor of Laws, followed an earlier appearance at the state capitol in Austin. There, as at Baylor, the emergencies of the moment, Vietnam and Santo Domingo, were not only on the president's mind, but very evident in his speech. He devoted only a minimum of time to domestic matters and dwelt almost entirely on the possibility of further crisis in this hemisphere. He minced no words in describing his policy. "Where we have given our word," he said, "we shall keep it. Where free men ask our help, we shall answer their call. We shall be just and prudent. We shall also be prompt and brave, for we're determined that peace shall not perish and the cause of freedom shall not be failed." Thus, a firm and forthright statement of the policy to which President Johnson and this country are committed, a policy of quick decision and prompt action. This is Bill Henry.
Now, special three-star report, the President versus the Critics, Fred Morrison.
There is daily evidence that the organized criticisms designed to alter the course of the administration and its campaign of decision and action are more noisy than effective. The teach-ins by the so-called intellectuals and the riotous student demonstrations, all in opposition to the government, get top attention. A demonstration by a group of 50 students against policies in Vietnam and Santo Domingo get headlines. An outpouring of hundreds of students in favor of the policies is reported in the back pages. But in spite of the highly publicized critics, there are signs that the basic public support for the anti-communist policies remains unchanged. In today's congressional record, Senator Gail McGee of Wyoming commends the many newspapers which make clear that the United States, through its policies, seeks to keep the peace, not to destroy it. He cites an editorial in the Cincinnati Enquirer which speaks of President Johnson's dueling with the left-leaning intellectuals. The editorial then quotes from a passage by Theodore Roosevelt, which speaks of the poor spirits who neither enjoy much nor suffer much because they live in the gray twilight that neither knows victory nor defeat. Senator McGee also quotes from a Scripps Howard editorial, which comments on the unwillingness of the communists to negotiate in Vietnam. It says, "They show no more sign of relenting than do the college hecklers. the editorial M adds, but there are other people in the world who do have open minds. And it is the open minds which will decide the issues. This is Fred Morrison.
Now on to Special Three-Star Report, the Pentagon, the military's part in the new order. John Barnes.
In the Caribbean, as in Southeast Asia, we continue to have it demonstrated that the nation's diplomatic policy, however sound, requires the support of the military. Numerous statesmen throughout history have tried to believe that a cause could be so just that it would win out by wholly peaceful argument and by generous compromise. But Mr. Wilson's confident hopes were blasted by World War I and Mr. Chamberlain's by World War II. And the longer the struggle against aggression in Vietnam continues, the plainer it is that only military strength and great determination could hold the aggressor back. In the Dominican Republic, it is clear that the pacifying efforts of the Organization of American States could have been exerted successfully only under the protection of the military. Precisely as in some of our own cities, it is plain that public safety depends on police protection. In two hemispheres, then, we have encountered much the same menace and learned by our own direct experience that first principles stand unchanged. That if a policy is worth maintaining, it is worth fighting for and sacrificing for. That peace and freedom do not come to us simply because we are good, but because we are courageous as well. Churchill's noble promise of blood and sweat and tears still rings in memory. We have spent very little, but we have stood firm. This is John Barnes.
Now the special three-star report, the United Nations. Threats of disintegration. David Wills.
United Nations Secretary Thant is expressing his fear that it is an embarrassing precedent for the Organization of American States, instead of the UN, to be taking peacekeeping action in the Dominican Republic. Thant commends to friends of the United Nations that they should do some heart-searching, for he sees the UN headed toward disintegration unless present trends are reversed. Some of the UN's closest friends have already searched their hearts and reached the conclusion that the UN has already disintegrated. The last session of the Assembly never got past general debate. The UN is encumbered by a huge debt that no nation is anxious to pay off and cannot undertake any further peacekeeping operations unless some big power provides a subsidy. The Assembly has grown rapidly, both in numbers and in irresponsibility. Even so warm a friend of the UN as the Guardian of Manchester, England, has already concluded that the UN will languish in frustration until it has undergone major and controversial reforms. In retrospect, the core of its troubles lies in the fact that while it was erected upon the principles of Western democracy, a veto was given to communist Russia, a self-avowed and dedicated enemy of such principles. It is this that has turned the UN from a peacekeeping body into a theater of the Cold War. And 20 years after the UN was organized at San Francisco, it is still denied its proper role until the Cold War is resolved in favor of victory for freedom. This is David Wills.
Now, special three-star report, the home front. Where to, Uncle Sam? Ned Brooks.
There are signs that Congress is looking with some apprehension at the vast new domestic program now unfolding. Some say it is for the better, some think it is for the worse. But all agree that the nation is on the threshold of a new era in domestic policies, an era which looks to massively greater expenditures, more social reforms and government services for the people, sometimes talked of in the past but never fully accepted as realities of the future. This has nothing to do with the Civil Rights Bill. The principles of that legislation have been accepted by both parties, and no longer are they subject to controversy. It is the other social programs of the free spending type that are causing some consternation. Congress is well united on the subject of medical care for the aged, but they are all wondering how far it will go, where it will stop, how much it will cost, and how the money will be provided. There are current minor bickerings on the details of such programs as the anti-poverty drive. But those surface differences are unimportant compared to the deep-seated concern over the question of what doors such a program will open. Programs of extreme social reform have been instituted in some of the countries of Europe, and those countries have survived thus far. But are the American people willing to undertake them, and is Congress ready to take the responsibility for bringing them into being? Those are some of the questions being pondered in the Congress as the new era unfolds. This is Ned Brooks.
I'll be back in a moment with tonight's Editor's Notebook. First, Hugh James.
Friends, Sun Oil Company would like to join with you in observance of Memorial Day this Sunday. Probably no day on our calendar so clearly defines our American heritage. This day serves to remind us that Americans down through the generations have been willing to make any sacrifice for the protection of our precious freedom. We believe that the men and women who gave their lives for our freedom did so in the full knowledge that Americans would be ever grateful for their sacrifice. Let us prayerfully thank God that Americans are willing, at the price of life itself, to defend our way of life. In so doing, we will remember that our nation is founded on the premise of free choice. We may read what we want, say what we want, and stand by those principles that have made America great. Let us remember the freedom we stand for. And now back to your Sunoco newsroom.
And so tonight I come to you with my final comment in the Editor's Notebook as we sign off after 18 years of broadcasting. Our first thought is of you, our listeners. None could have had a more stimulating group. And how many have been the encouraging letters. And how grateful we also have been for the critical ones, because they often helped us to re-examine our course and set our sights anew. These broadcasts developed a team of reporters of such outstanding ability that if we were to start all over again, we would hope to enlist the talents of them all. It is a privilege to have been associated with them and to hold them in such high respect. From NBC and from our sponsor, Sun Oil Company, the privilege to establish the record of the longest continuous broadcasting in network history. I can think of no single instance in nearly two decades of work with and for and on behalf of them in which there have been any serious challenges or cross purposes of points of view. We have been very fortunate men and women on this three-star extra, having been given the opportunity to work out our journalistic ideas and ample facilities and funds to do the job. Some years ago, a respected friend of mine, a man active in the fullness of life despite advancing years, described to me the story of a very old man who crossed a perilous stream flowing at sullen tide at dimming twilight, and having crossed, proceeded to build a bridge over the rushing waters. And a fellow traveler nearby who witnessed this performance exclaimed with surprise, "Why waste your strength? Why build this bridge when certainly you are not likely to cross over this rushing stream again?" And the old man replied, "Good friend, on the path I have come, there will follow after me today a youth whose feet will pass this way. This stream, which has been naught to me, to that fair-haired youth may a pitfall be. He, too, must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I am building this bridge for him." I cannot help but think of that story tonight as we come to the terminating broadcast of Three Star Extra. For in a sense, it illuminates the aspirations we have had over these past 18 momentous years. It illuminates our great objective, which we set before us when we started, and which we have attempted in our fashion to keep before us up to this final broadcast. And that is to report the news honestly and fairly, and to comment upon it with the best intelligence we could summon, keeping ever in mind certain basic fundamental principles of the worth of the system under which we live. In the back of our minds has been that in the days to come, younger men will pass our way, and there will be perilous streams to cross. And if we have, in our small way, built a bridge or two over which those younger men can gain the safer side, then it may be argued that the political precepts which made our great nation the heroic and wonderful institution it is may have been well served. For it has been our hope that our system will continue strong, and then it will maintain its inspiring momentum toward eventual freedom of all men everywhere. That surely remains our hope on this evening of May 28, 1965, on which we bid you goodbye and good night.
This is the NBC Radio Network.